Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, from the frozen tundra of Minnesota to the shores of New Jersey, where it is windy and rainy and all kinds of stuff. We've gone the gamut here as far as the weather is concerned on the Writer's Lounge. This is show number 73. It is November 17th, 2014, and I am your host, Tom Riedel, along with my co-host. We will bring her on shortly, as we normally do. Her name is Robin Eduardo. And today, brief intro to today's show, and I always sort of preface shows here by saying we have a wonderful show today, but this one really is something. It's the first time in the history of the Writer's Lounge that we're going to be doing two parts of a book, and this is the first part on tonight's show. The next part will be December 8th, and who knows, we may even have to add to that, because the subject matter is very intriguing, very interesting, very disturbing, and very fascinating at the same time. The name of it is Nothing Is As It Appears, It's All Smokin' Mirrors. And smokin' is spelled not S-M-O-K-I-N-G, it's spelled S-M-O-K-E-N. So there you go. And we'll have Jim Allen on shortly, about probably 10 minutes after the hour, because we want to get him on. We have a lot to talk about. But the Writer's Lounge blog, you can find it over at tomriedel.com/blog. And over there, you can click on the radio player up in the upper left-hand corner of the page and listen to today's show as you read the review on Jim's book and also all the other books that I've reviewed over the course of the last 3.5 years. You can find us on Facebook. Just go to the Blog Talk Radio site. And you can find us on Twitter also. And if you would like, the old-fashioned way, of course, we're always there for you on email at twl11@yahoo.com. And next time up, next week, upcoming guest author will be KJ Bagley, and she's written a book called Hierophant's Bridge. We shift back to fiction next week, and today, of course, is nonfiction. Of course, some people may argue that point, but we'll talk about that later on. And of course, the sponsor for today's show, as always, Magic Pen Web Design offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Fill out the free estimate form over at magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And I would like to let everybody know, if you're going to call, we may be flooded tonight. So, but you can call us at toll-free at 877-878-1436 or 626-213-5613. And if we're not flooded, then you can always listen to our show in the archives. We're there for you, and all the shows are there, all 73 of them. And now let's bring on Robin. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening with her on the East Coast.
It's same old, but really the winter is coming in crazy. I can't really find the words to describe it because, as you know, we've had the really nice warm weather and then freezing cold weather and back and forth, and then of course, tonight we have a storm blowing through, and my husband reports where he was down the road a little bit in Freehold, New Jersey. He said the winds were, it was like a tornado. But here, we're about maybe 15, 20 miles north of that, and it wasn't as bad, but it was pretty bad. And I was afraid we'd lose electricity, but it's been fine, and it's died down a bit. But I hear you have snow already.
Oh, we have snow, all right. We've got 10-degree weather here, and it's kind of interesting, Robin, that we're going to be talking about the weather, because we are talking about the weather, because mm-hmm. that's a topic that normally comes up when you're in an elevator or some other place in public when you want to start conversation, and we do it often. But when we talk to Jim about the weather, he has a different take on the weather, and I think you're going to find that very fascinating when we get to that subject, if we can get to it, because like I say, we have a lot of subjects to cover here. So I see that he's waiting patiently there. He's actually a little bit west of us, meaning, Minnesota. He's over in Utah, north mm-hmm. of Las Vegas, and close to the mountains. So he's also experiencing wet winter weather there where he is because he's so high up. So mm-hmm. it's always interesting. And he used to be a skier, too. He, in fact, had tried out to be on the Olympic team when he was younger and missed out on it. So he's been around. He's also worked with dragsters back in the 1960s, I believe, and we can hear a little bit about that when he comes on the show. So it's really exciting to talk to Jim. We're all going to find him very fascinating. Like I have said, I have talked to him now for probably altogether about 5 hours. Him and I just talk on the phone constantly. So now this is sort of adding to it.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about, Robin? We got a couple more minutes.
You know, you put me on the spot like this and I don't know what to say.
Okay.
I am looking forward to the conversation though, because, and I didn't mean to giggle before when you were talking about, you know, the difference between fiction and nonfiction and how some people might view his book or the things that he discusses, maybe perhaps in their view, fiction. But you know me, I kind of like to keep an open mind about all sorts of things because, I mean, for one thing, who am I to say it? Something's true, not true, or just because I have not had personal experience, you just never know. So I'm really looking forward to hearing, you know, what Jim has to say about, well, several topics. We have UFOs and all sorts of things we're going to discuss.
We have everything. we have everything, and it's all fit into a 176-page book. And as I said, that 176-page book is very easy to read, but the subject matter inside that book can go on for hours and hours. If you just look mm-hmm. at it and start talking about it, you can't stop. It's like eating peanuts. You just have to keep going from more to more. So anyways, just before I start to read the introduction here and go over my review of Jim's book, I wanted to mention there's a documentary out there, and I'm going to say, once again, I try to be really truthful with my authors and everybody else that I talk to. Jim's book was good, but it wasn't by far the best conspiracy theory book that I've ever read before. It does give you new information that we haven't heard before, but there is something that totally blew me away, and I think Jim was sort of expecting that his book would blow me away in a way that this documentary that I'd seen did, and it did in some ways, but it couldn't come close to this documentary that I'd watched years ago, and I'm holding it in my hands right now, and it's called Crop Circles: Quest for Truth, and it was put out there by director William Gazeki, and if you haven't had a chance to see that, go in and look at it, folks. It has scientific evidence in there, and I mean scientific evidence. They've taken these crop stalks, they put them under a microscope, and they found that the molecular structure of these stalks have been changed. And then that goes against what everybody thinks as a conspiracy theory, as far as hoaxes are concerned. that a board somehow mashed down these stocks, and it's impossible, according to what you see in this film by Gizecki, when they show you the scientific evidence, how the stock is bent, because it's not crushed, it's actually altered, and it's just amazing. So you get a chance, try that out. It's Crop Circles, Quest for Truth, and we'll probably talk a little bit to Jim about that. But I want to get on now with his review, and then we'll bring him on. And the book is Nothing Is As It Appears, It's All Smoke and Mirrors. It was written by Jim Allen and published by Page Publishing Incorporated in 2014. You may purchase it at Amazon.com, Kindle. Jim Allen, in this book, takes you on a wild ride through some of the greatest tragedies in American history. With the evidence and logic provided, the reader can come to their own conclusions as to which events exhibit cover-up and conspiracy. This book demonstrates that information the general public receives through media sources is often biased and manipulated in content from higher sources. It's a fast, easy read and will probably have a profound psychological effect on the reader. It will leave you with an imprint that nothing is as it appears, it's all smoke and mirrors. And that's what Amazon had to say, and this is what I had to say. Jim Allen is just another conspiracy theory nut, or is he? If you go anywhere online or offline and mention the subjects that he outlines in his book, you will most likely find someone in the crowd who pushes to the top of the conversation with a swagger and dead uncertainty that we are visited by aliens, that JFK assassination wasn't accomplished by a lone gunman, that the weather is controlled by our government, that 9/11 did not happen the way we are being led to believe in our monetary system, and the wars we fight are not being run the way most of us believe either. We may spend a little time listening to this person and politely nod, say yeah, and tip our drink to him as he prattles on, but then in mere minutes, they can't come fast enough, we're back to talking to others about our lives and whether we should pick up our cat food at the store or wait a few days. In the meantime, this person walks away scratching their head in frustration, wondering if anyone really listened to what he was saying. This person could very well be the author of this book. I have said, and many more have said, that when you are approached by a person with a topic or comment that you don't know too much about, like how do UFOs fly and what really happened to that building in Oklahoma City in 1995, do some research. The problem is we don't have the time, which also makes the case that we will suck in and believe or not believe most of what people say today without researching it. Take the bombardment of political ads we see on TV today, for example. Out of 100 people, after watching 30 minutes of political ads on any given day, how many people will actually sit down and research even just one of them? Think about it. And this is why we shouldn't discount Jim Allen and what he is telling us in his book. Sure, the market is flooded with conspiracy books these days, and it makes us go ho-hum, another one. Jim Allen has information that I have not seen published before. It's well worth the read. It will make you think. It's an easy-to-read book that will give you another view of the subjects that he talks about. Remember, it is about our history and our country. We should listen, at least, to what the author has to say. And with that, let's get right to it. And out of Utah comes Jim Allen. Jim, how are you?
I'm great. I want you to know it's an honor to be on your show.
And I really appreciate you being here. And as we've talked before, and I told Robin that we've probably tallied up close to 5 hours already on the phone, so I already feel like I know you like you're my uncle. So with that, Jim, I would like to ask you to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about what got you started on this journey.
Well, before we go any further, I do want to say something. And what I'm going to say is basically I'm not a member of any right or left-wing radical group. I'm not a member of any militia. I'm a very old and very concerned adult who's worked hard all his life, and I'm concerned about our children's and our grandchildren's future. And that's why I wrote this book. And that's the main thing. Actually, what started this whole thing started back in 1952. And I was 11 years old, going on 12. And I had great parents. I lived in a little tiny place called Golden, Colorado, which I'm sure a lot of football fans would say, geez, that's where Coors is made, which it is. And that's what Golden was known for. But there was only about 2,000 people that lived there. Very small community right at the very base of the Colorado Rockies. And, geez, I like to do a lot of things. I like to snow ski, and I used to build and fly combat planes, model airplanes that we used to tie ribbons to the tail and chase each other, try to cut the ribbon. Uh-huh. And I had a lot of vices, let's say. But one of my main ones was I like to fish for trout. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool old trout fisherman, and I wished I had more time in this old age to do more of it, but I don't. But back then, my folks used to go a couple times a month into the mountains and plan trips to go fishing. But I had a friend that told me that there was a place outside of Golden, about an hour and a half's hike out there, because there's no roads out there, and I was too young to drive anyway. But there was a place out there where there was some really great fishing. And so he told me where it was. I told my parents that I wanted to hike out there on a Saturday. And basically they said, okay, file your flight plan, be back before dark, take your dog, and don't blow it. Because I knew darn well that they kept me on a pretty long leash. And I knew darn well if I didn't keep to the flight plan, I'd never be able to do it again. And they were great parents. I love the way they raised me. And that's how come I turned out to be such a crazy person. At any rate.
It was a different day back then. That we could,
hi, Robin.
We could do. Yeah, hi. That we could do those sort of things, you know, go out and explore. And parents don't let children do that anymore. So I'm with you. I totally get what you're saying.
Well, things were so different back then that it's almost like black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this place where I was going to hike was about 7 miles out of Golden, up, you know, at the base of the mountains between a couple of hogbacks. I don't know if anybody knows what those are, but they're upcropping mountains that look like dinosaur backs, so they call them hogbacks. But anyway, there was nothing out there. I mean, for 6.5 miles of this trip, there were no houses, no buildings, no nothing. It was all just mountainous area back then. Now it's all populated. They built homes up there and everything else. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I hiked out there, and I got there, and the reservoir that where he said that we should fish had a huge 12-foot-high chain-link fence with barbed wire on the top of it, all the way around it, had signs on it said, Arvada City Water Supply, you can't, no trespassing, don't enter, verboten.
Mm.
Anyway, I thought, well, what the heck, I can't climb that fence, I can't get in there, I came all the way out here for nothing. And then I noticed there was a pretty good-sized stream coming into it, and I thought, well, maybe I can fish in there, there ought to be trout in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I hiked down, and there was another fence, and this one had a sign on it that said no trespassing, and it said DOE, Department of Energy. And I thought, well, what the heck's that? Anyway, it was just a barbed wire fence, so I figured, well, I came too far, I'm going through this one. And I went through the fence, my dog was with me, and she went right through the fence with me. And I went up, found a pool in the stream, threw a line in, and sure enough, wham, I had a nice one, about 14 inches, maybe a pound and a half. And I honestly, as a kid, I felt like I'd struck gold. And I went on up, caught a couple more. I kept hiking up the stream until I heard a waterfall, a big one. And so I thought, well, I got dinner. I had three big trout, and that was enough for Mom, Dad, and myself. And I thought, I'm going to go out and throw my line in this waterfall if I can find it. And I got went up there, and sure enough, there it was. And it had a big, big pool underneath it. Threw a line in there, and the next thing I know, my rod bent over backwards. And I'll tell you, I had something on there that was so big, I never saw it, but it snapped my line in about 2 seconds. I had 4-pound test leader on there, so it had to be bigger than that. Anyway, I thought, well, I got to go. It's late in the afternoon, and I took my fish, and I was really happy, and I hiked back home and flew through the door, and my mom said, well, what do you got? And I said, I got dinner. And gave her the fish, and she was happy as all heck, and next thing you know, Dad comes through the door, and he says, well, how was your fishing trip? And I says, well, look in there. Mom's got it. I said, I got dinner. And he said, well, it taught the kid good, didn't I? And that's the way my dad was. He was always doing that kind of stuff. Anyway, we sat down to dinner, and I'm telling the fish story. I said, Dad, I hooked a fish so big that it broke my line instantly. I said, I didn't even see it. And my dad gets this look on his face, which he used to get when he thought I was fibbing. And he got this look on his face and put his hands out there and started spreading them further and further apart and said, well, how big was it? You know? And I said, I don't know, Dad. I never saw it, but it was huge. And he just grabbed me for the rest of the night. And I vowed at that time to go back and catch that fish. So every Saturday, I kept going back. And I went back a couple times, and nothing. And then I went back a third time. And what I was going to do is this time I was armed with 9-pound test leader. And I had my dad's net, and I was going to catch this fish no matter what. And prove to him I wasn't lying. Well, I got about 7/8 of the way up there between the base of the Colorado Rockies and this other hogback. And you ever get that feeling like something's behind you?
Yeah.
And you think somebody's watching or something? Anyway, I got that, and it came all over me, and I was really trucking up there to go catch that fish. And I turned around, and there was a ship in the air. And the doggone thing, at the time, it just scared me to death. Because I turned around, I was pretty close, maybe 250 feet from it. It was probably about 200 feet off the ground. And the darn thing looked to me as big as a house. And the main thing was it was a disc. It had no propellers. Back in 1952, you looked up in the sky, airplanes had propellers. Right. And I'll tell you what, the first flashback that came over me was Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon stuff, and I thought, me and my dog are going to be vaporized here any minute. And I really was scared. I'm not kidding. Yeah. I was scared to death. I'll never forget it. Anyway, my dog sat down beside me, and she had them floppy ears, and boy, those ears were standing straight up. She was looking at it. I was looking at it. I kept looking at her out of the corner of my eye. And we both just stood there for maybe 15 minutes, this thing. And I don't know whether it was staring at us or not, but it probably was, because how could you miss a dog and a person out there in the middle of the field with nothing else, you know?
Right, right.
Anyway, about that time, it started going backwards away from me. And it started real slow moving. And, boy, I'll tell you what, it was like somebody hit the afterburners. That thing took off, and in a matter of 2 seconds, it was gone out of my sight. I couldn't see it. It just, like a streak, it was gone. And I thought to myself, phew, I was relieved because nothing really happened. I didn't move. My feet never left the ground. So as far as I know, absolutely nothing happened, and it just left. Well, I turned around with the dog, and I said, come on, Ginger, let's go catch that fish. And I didn't care about catching dinner or anything. I went after that fish. And And I'll tell you what, I went up to that pool. I threw a line in once. Nothing happened. I threw a line in the second time, and I hooked it again. And this time I got it. And I got it up to the shore, brought the net over its tail. This thing was huge. I tried to lift it out of the water with one hand, and I couldn't do it. So I set my pole down on the bank, and I used both hands, pulled the net up on the grassy shore, and I just stared at this thing. It was huge, and it was beautiful. And I'll tell you what, I all of a sudden started having these flashbacks of, it was like 95 degrees out then. It was the end of summer, and it was hotter than all get out. And I'd barely been getting the fish home anyway without them spoiling. And I had these flashbacks of this great big fish, me taking it home, and it turning black before I got there and all rotten. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do? You know, it'll be spoiled by the time I get it home, but I got to prove to my dad I caught it. I got to prove to him. And then I just, something came over me and said, put the fish back in the water. So I took my pliers out, pulled the hook out of it, and I let it down into the water and sat on the bank for about 5 minutes just watching this fish inside the net. And I thought, why should I kill this beautiful creature just to prove to my dad that I caught it? And I let it go. I let the darn thing go.
I wanted to ask you, Jim, a little bit about that. Like I say, we've got kind of a short show here, so I want to make sure we get in enough questions here. But right around this time, correct me if I'm wrong, but 1952 was what? Maybe 5 years after Roswell, right?
Yeah, Roswell was in 1947.
Yeah, and I was just wondering if there's anybody around there in your family or in your neighborhood that was still talking about the Roswell incident, and how comfortable were you talking about what you saw? If you could take us back to, I believe in the book you wrote that you'd gone back to your dad, and tell us what happened when you got back home.
Well, to answer your question, first of all, I never even gave UFOs a thought before then. They were, you know, you heard a little bit about it, but the biggest problem was the atmosphere back then was, if you told somebody you saw one of them, they thought you were crazy. They really did. And,
yeah.
And in the back of my head, after seeing that thing, I thought to myself, I better not tell anybody because they want to commit me, and especially my parents. I was really worried about telling my parents because I think that they would have thought I was losing it. So I didn't. I never said a word. And
I'm sorry, but in those days, it was different back then, because today, as a young kid, if you mention something like that, people would, at the most, they'd shrug it off. But literally in those days, if you did mention it, there was a serious repercussion that could happen because of it. You literally could be placed somewhere, and so the fear was very real for you not to reveal that. That wasn't something a kid would go around bragging about back in those days, whereas kids today might.
Yeah, I just, something told me, say nothing. Don't say a word about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I did the right thing at the time, because people ostracized people for that stuff back then.
Yes, yes.
It was, people were being ostracized for it. Anyway, the real deal was, I was okay with that. I was very curious about it. It was affecting the way I thought about religion and everything else at the time, but I didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, what I did is in about a year after that happened, I got my hands on Project Blue Book in 1953, and they had just released it. And basically, I read it, and it said, we have no conclusive proof after a 10-year study that UFOs exist. And they're either weather balloons, swamp gas, weather anomalies, abnormalities or anomalies. That's the word. And on and on and on. And that just lit me up like a Christmas tree, because I said to myself, who in the heck, it was the Center of Atmospheric Research out of Boulder, Colorado, and the United States Air Force that did that study. Uh-huh. And I'm saying to myself, these guys are lying through their teeth, because I saw a real one. And I'll tell you what, I sent Tom a picture of not the ship I saw naturally, but I sent him a picture of exactly what I did see, which is probably the best photographic proof to this day that they exist. And he's got it. And he might comment on that.
I have it right here in front of me. I'm looking at it right now, and I wish this was a video. I could show everybody this picture, but it's phenomenal. It's very well defined, and according to the research on the photo, they tried to debunk it, and they couldn't. So it's a very impressive-looking photo, and I can imagine how I would feel if I looked up as an 11-year-old and saw that in the sky and being told that or led to believe by the government and other officials and even friends that it was a weather balloon. That's no weather balloon. That's no swamp gas. And Jim, I know we're going to have you back on December 8th, folks, and we're going to have him come on. We're going to talk more about UFOs at that time, and we're going to go more extensively into it, including a story that I heard him tell and he told me about when he had met up with a friend of his, and his dad was in the Air Force, Jim?
Yeah, he was stationed at Holloman Air Force Base.
And they recovered, apparently, according to what Jim had said, this man actually saw the recovery of the aircraft from the Roswell incident, and also a group of archaeological students saw bodies from this craft. So we'll get on to that on December 8th. But, Jim, like right now, what I'd like to ask you about is, trying to clear my throat here. In the first few chapters of your book, you refer to how we retrieved information before computers and such, and you mentioned that several people would talk, but only with anonymity, that's what I'm trying to say, and with their safety in mind. Do you see more information being revealed in the years ahead after many of the sources have died?
Well, there was a lot of incidents, and there was a lot of sightings that were getting more and more press in the newspapers. Back then, television was a little tiny black and white picture in a great big cabinet, if you remember. So television was just starting. But there was an awful lot of newspaper stuff. I used to cut out everything I could find, because after I saw that Blue Book thing, I went nuts. I mean, I was on a rampage to find out the truth about this. And I started cutting out a lot of articles, and I kept them in a shoebox. But we can talk more about that later. But what it did is it led me on a quest to find out the truth. And I was determined, no matter what I do or what I'm going to do, I'm going to find out why the government's lying about this. And I went on a search. And what happened was I found out a whole lot of stuff about the government. And every time I'd get close on something, on a UFO, I'd run into a brick wall, and I couldn't get anywhere. And I finally determined that brick wall was the government. And basically, all of a sudden, I started finding out all kinds of stuff about the government. And this, of course, led me on the chase. And most everything I found out was contrary to what the press story was, or later on what television had on it and told you the story. And most people had no idea about what's really going on in the government.
So what you're talking about is along the lines of like the New World Order, and when people
yes.
talk about the Illuminati and all that sort of stuff.
Well,
am I off base?
I didn't, yeah, Robin, I didn't get into that until later in life.
Okay.
It took
okay.
a while.
But
to
you
get
were
there.
On the path of getting to that information.
Oh, I was on an absolute path to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, the first thing I found out about was the Federal Reserve, which,
yes.
you know, when you build a house, you pour concrete, and if you don't do it right, the house is sooner or later going to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And the monetary system of our country is based on the Federal Reserve, which it didn't used to be. Our forefathers wrote in the Constitution that only Congress could print and coin our money, and that only they had the right to do it. But
mm-hmm.
a long time ago, some very, very serious people, very powerful, and bankers the world over, hatched what I call a heinous plot to take control of our monetary system in this country and also take control of every monetary system in every country. And
mm-hmm.
what they did, and I'm sure you've heard this stuff before, but they had a meeting a long time ago. Actually, the first meeting was in 1910 on Jekyll Island off of Georgia. And these very powerful people hatched the idea is to start a private corporation called the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor is there any reserve. It's a private corporation run by international bankers. And what happened is I kept digging and digging and digging, and anyone can find out the truth about this. The Federal Reserve is incorporated in all 50 of the states, and so is the Internal Revenue Service, which was also created after the Federal Reserve Act was passed as a collection arm for the Federal Reserve. And
mm-hmm.
it is also a private corporation owned by these private people, these families that own it and other corporations that own it, and it is all of public record. Anybody can find this out. And it's controlling our money, our monetary system, and it's controlling the printing of our money. And you've probably heard that the dollar isn't worth anything like what it was, and some people say it's worth a nickel. I say it isn't even worth the paper it's written on, because
mm-hmm.
they've been running these presses 24/7, and the gold and everything else that backs up our money according to our monetary system, the way it was set up with the Constitution and what our forefathers wrote, is no longer the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've got is a concrete foundation that's crumbling simply because of people who want to control the world, which later I found out who these people were. And yes, what you asked me about a New World Order and stuff,
mm-hmm.
if you look on the dollar bill, you see a pyramid
that
has a detached capstone with the eye in it, which is the eye of the illuminated ones, or they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And across the top it says Annuit Copius. Across the bottom it says Novus Ordo Seculorum. And that's Latin, and how many people you know speak Latin?
No, we don't. And I also wanted to mention, too, that the dollar bill that you had mentioned was only worth the paper that it's printed on is actually what the dollar bill is, and what I've learned from your book, and it's more ingrained in my mind now. I've heard it before, but what I learned in your book prominently about the dollar bill is that it's just a loan note. It has no
yeah.
worth or value at all. It basically says you have a right to a piece of the gold that sits in our treasury. Is that about right, Jim?
Well, it's close. Excuse me. Basically, the dollar bill that they are printing, they are charging us interest to print this dollar bill, the banksters. Excuse me, I call them banksters. I wonder why. Anyway, they charge us the interest. You take 85% of the deficit, and that's interest that they've charged us against the continuous 24/7 printing of notes, Federal Reserve notes. Now, what's a note? If you go buy a car, you sign a note. If you finance it, if you buy a house, you sign a note. Well, that's all
right.
This money is a note. And
yes.
when you use it, that makes you the person who is using the note and makes you liable for the deficit that they have created mainly by charging us the interest on each dollar bill they print.
Yes.
Whew.
I know that's hard to swallow, but I think
this
would be a good segue now, Jim. In your book, you made a reference to it, and I, from reading your book, also made another connection. And let's go back further in the history. Let's go back to 1863, and then let's jump ahead to 1963. And those two dates and time should be of significance, and a lot of people out there that are listening should recognize those dates as assassination dates. Let's talk about Lincoln and JFK, how they're related, and how this all ties into what you just talked about.
Great. This is something very few people have talked about or thought about it, but this is really significant. Lincoln, back in the day, to finance the Civil War, the international bankers wanted him to borrow money from them to finance the war, which in turn they would charge, of course, great amounts of interest. And he didn't want to do it. And he was totally against it. He made some speeches to the American people, of which I have quoted in my book. And what he said was, no, I'm not gonna have the American people suffer for having to pay the interest for this war, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to print a special note that's only temporary called a greenback. And he said when the country gets back on its feet after the war is over, he said I'm going to dissolve the greenbacks, and this way we won't pay the bankers the interest on money loans. And that's what he did, and as a result, John Wilkes Booth nailed him. And that was the reason. He was assassinated back then as he crossed the banking lines. So it goes way back to then. And the thing about it is, which very few people really know, is that's the same reason that Kennedy was assassinated. And you can say, well, how does he know? Well, let me tell you. Kennedy had already wrote Executive Order 11110, which ordered the mints to start printing silver certificates again instead of Federal Reserve notes.
Uh-huh.
And he knew what was wrong, and he decided he was going to tell them to take their deficit and put it, you know, somewhere. And what he was going to do is he was going to take us back to the gold and silver standard, so every bill had fine print on it that said you can exchange this at any bank for a like amount of gold or silver. Now, what this does, this is a solid monetary system that our forefathers had set up for us, and it goes clear back to Jesus Christ if you want to go into the Bible. But basically, it gives you confidence that your economy is solid, and it's backed by gold and silver, so it's not jeopardized in any way, shape, or form. Well, this makes instant enemies, because the one thing you don't mess with is the money. And like Perry Mason says, follow the money trail. Well, it didn't take long. And a couple of notes along the way about this is that Gene Dixon told Kennedy, called him up on the phone and told him before how he was going to be assassinated in Dallas and told him not to go to Dallas. And then she actually came to the White House before he left and told him the same thing and said she was direly worried about him. And this is very interesting because she could see. She's like Edgar Casey. He could see. And she saw into the future and saw that he was going to be assassinated in Dallas. Mm-hmm. on that day, on November the 22nd in 1963. And you can say Castro did it, you can say the mob did it, you can say anything you want, but I'm telling you right now, it was done because he was getting ready to fix the monetary system. And no president has done this since.
It's a different take on what we've heard through the years, and I'm always interested and once again open-minded to examine that and to research that. And as far as the government's concerned, Jim, in your book you mentioned incidents such as Ruby Ridge and Waco and suggested the government took unjust action in these incidents. And as you mentioned at the top of the program, your views and your beliefs go across party lines, so it's neither Democrat or Republican. But isn't it possible that the government just made some very bad mistakes?
Not at all. There's enough evidence to prove there's a glitch in everything. And it's just like Kennedy's assassination. And there's another one. The bottom line is everybody saw the Zapruder film, and they said Kennedy was shot from behind. The best evidence whatsoever is the fact that when the fatal shot hit him in the head, his head was thrown backwards.
Uh-huh.
And it couldn't have happened if the bullet had come from behind. His head would have went forward, and it would have come out it would have went in the size of your thumb and come out the size of your hand on the front side. But it's obvious that what the Warren Commission said and what everybody said was not the truth. And the interesting thing about this is his brother Bobby, who was shot in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles by Sirhan Sirhan with a .22 pistol, who was in front of him, the autopsy report from the coroner basically said that the fatal bullet entered behind Kennedy's ear, and it was fired from such close range that there was powder burns all over the back of Bobby's head. Now, Sirhan was in front and was firing the gun from in front of Bobby Kennedy. Never did he get behind Bobby Kennedy. And there you have it. Those are the two main things. There's 100 other things that you could keep going until the cows come home that lead you to believe that you've been lied to.
That's the bottom line. There's just so many questions left, and they feed you information through the media today, I'm saying, you know, that they want you to believe. And so because we're spoon-fed this, it's so easy for, you know, all of us to just kind of blindly be led to believe what they want us to believe. And sometimes the questions just really aren't satisfactorily answered, because now we do have computers and we do have the means to look up information for ourselves, and there's just so much out there that you do start to question the stories that, because especially with the Kennedy assassination, because you're right, his head moved in a completely opposite direction just viewing the film of the assassination. You know it went down differently than how they say it did. So
I think
so fascinating.
I think
it's
a glaringly obvious thing, too, to mention here and not to forget, is a lot of this information has been locked up and we're not going to see it in our lifetimes. It's going to be released, 100 years after it happened?
They put it in a 75-year time capsule in the National Archives to be opened in 75 years. And I'll tell you what's going to happen when that capsule's opened in 75 years, and maybe this will go down in history. But what you're going to find is a complete report from the Warren Commission.
Yeah.
it's going to say the same thing that they told us back then.
Exactly. Yes. We're really going to have the truth.
Yeah. Jim, we got 10 minutes left on the show here, and I want to get to the rest of the questions here. I got a few more to ask you. And I was just wondering, in researching this book, you have said that most of it was gathered the old-fashioned way. Like you say, you don't have a computer. But with all the information and misinformation that is out there on the Internet, how would you suggest that we and others do our research? Can you give us any kind of an insight or idea of how that could be done?
Well, anything political that happens politically can be found in the Library of Congress as a matter of record. So it goes down. Whatever happens in all the legislative sessions is absolutely available through the Library of Congress. So that's a matter of public record. The rest of this stuff, some of it's easy to find, and some of it's very difficult. You got to remember something. The UFO thing is probably the single biggest cover-up conspiracy in the history of this planet. And it's worldwide. It isn't just America. It's worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Kennedy assassination is like, well, 2 and 2 doesn't make 4. In the
mm-hmm.
Kennedy assassination. So if you start to use logic on everything, there's been events like Ruby Ridge, Waco, and Oklahoma City, which
yes.
in a series of events, I'm sure everybody smelled something wrong. You know, I mean,
sure.
it doesn't. Lots of things do not make sense in these major issues where men, women, and children are killed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the bottom line is, once you start digging, you can find the glitches. And the glitches are real. And they tell you that this could not have happened this way. Period. It couldn't
mm-hmm.
have happened. And
yeah.
Or in the case of Ruby Ridge, it did happen that way. And in the
and
case of Waco,
Oklahoma,
it did
Oklahoma
happen that
City,
way. Pardon?
Too. You talked about Oklahoma City in your book. I found that fascinating because there was information there that I never heard before about how that building could not have been blown up by a fertilizer truck like it did.
Well, impossible. Impossible.
Yeah.
Absolutely
and
impossible.
We could go on about that, like I say, but we're
yeah.
kind of running out of time here. And
yeah.
I would like to ask you, Jim, I'm sure you've heard it. You've heard me mention it, not in a bad way, because I, for the most part, and I think Robin will also say, and she did say, that she's very open-minded. I think we
yeah,
need to
I
remain
do try
open-minded.
To keep my mind open.
There may be things that we don't quite understand about what you're writing, or there may be things that we disagree about, but there's certainly a lot that can be agreed upon in the book that you wrote, as far as I'm concerned. But I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that might call you things such as crazy and a conspiracy theorist. What do you say to those people who have that to say about you? What would you say to them?
Well, that's no different than that's a tag that the government has come up with, conspiracy
yes.
theorist. You know,
yes.
in other words, you know, that's somebody who only has a theory that there's a conspiracy, but there
yeah.
really isn't one.
Yeah.
You follow me?
Yeah.
They've turned
and,
it into
and,
a negative. They've actually turned that phrase
know,
into a negative when it's actually, it is. It's a conspiracy theory. And,
well, I heard something. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm finished.
I heard something on the world news the other night that just fried me. I mean, it just took me apart. And what they were saying on there is that anybody that believes in the Constitution and generally belongs to a militia or whatever kind of group is
mm-hmm.
Is a domestic terrorist. And where are they getting this stuff? You know, they're making it up and saying it. And the bottom line is, this is them saying it, not us. We're not saying
mm-hmm.
it. And
yeah.
as far as theory goes, brother, everything I put in that book, which is about 1/100th of what I know, I was very careful about. And I can back up just about everything in that book. And the bottom line is, it's the truth, and there's no such thing as a truth fairy, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I would recommend that everybody go out there also and do a search for Caravan to Midnight. Just put that into your search engine and put Jim Allen in there, and you will have a good look at Jim, because Jim is on that program for 3 hours. And you can tell just by looking at the man that he's somebody who's down to earth. He used to be a drag racer, and he used to be a skier, almost an Olympian. Didn't quite make it, but you know, Jim, you've done well, and I think a lot of people out there should be proud of you and the research that you're doing, not for just yourself, but for this country, because you are doing it for the people. There's that phrase again, the people. The government should be paying more attention to us instead of themselves and their pockets. But anyway,
we are the people. It's true.
Exactly.
You know,
and
that phrase, we are the people. And I think the government, we lose sight of we're supposed to be the important, you know, party to this whole thing. Not the government in and of itself is not supposed to be the most important thing.
Yeah,
so we have a right to information. We have a right to know, you know, and to ask those questions, and then not to be told, oh, well, you're just a conspiracy theorist, you know, as if that is a bad thing. You know, it's not a bad thing.
We hire them to do our bidding. They're our employees. We vote for them. We elect them. And they're supposed to go up there and solve the problems that are problems of all of us, for the people.
Mm-hmm.
When Congress Congress has a 7% approval rating, they're getting so brazen they don't even care.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yep.
So anyway, folks, I got to cut you off here. We're going to move to the end of the program. Got 2 minutes left. Jim, I just want to let everybody know that you will be back on December 8th. We will talk nothing but UFOs in that program. So if you want to tune in back on the program at that time, that'll be fun. We'll have Robin here, and we'll be talking about little green men, as they like to call them, and all those other little things that are going on. So it'll be fun. And I just want to ask you one thing, Jim. Are you working on another book, and where can we find you on the Internet?
Well, on the Internet, everything's being set up right now. This is a brand new book, and it was copyrighted in 2012, but we just got it out recently with a new publisher. And as far as finding it, the best place to get the book is off Amazon.com. But it'll eventually be available, and I'll eventually be set up with social media and with websites and everything. But you're getting in on the ground floor of this right now.
Yep, cool. And I appreciate you being on the program, Jim, and we will see you on December 8th, my friend, and we'll be talking before then, okay?
It sounds really good, and Robin, it's a pleasure to meet you and talk to you. I presume this show goes to New Jersey, to Freehold,
yes,
New Jersey?
Yes, it does.
Does it really?
Yes,
I have a very good friend in Freehold, New Jersey, and I'm going to tell him.
Great.
Okay. Very good.
Thank
you. See you later, Jim. Take care.
All right. Very good.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there we go. Like I say, we don't have any time to spare here, and we could go on and on for probably another hour, Robin, but it's time to say goodnight. And next time up would be on the 24th. And they would be next week. And the name of the author is K.J. Bagley, and her book, Hierophant's Bridge, will be on, and we'll see you then. And until then, let the story begin. We'll see you then. See you later, Robin.
Good night.
another day. Your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in.